mission. So what they can do to improve technology, actually maybe some of you do have a problem. I don't have any problem with it. I think it's great. If you can make a recorder that's this size rather than what Govinda Maharaj was first using to record Srila Sridhar Maharaj, a reel-to-reel tape recorder. And he said he used to have to spend 50 rupees for one tape. And so therefore, he said, many of the talks that I recorded have been lost because I didn't want to buy many of these tapes. And so I kept recording over. So when one was finished, then record again, recording over it like that. So if they can make it like this, instead of a big box like this, that's like a suitcase size, well, very good. Why not? Wonderful. And the quality is better, the quality of the recording, everything is better, and very quick to reproduce. And on many different, through different media, like the internet, of course, and so many things, so. Very good, great, we love it, we like it, we live it. But the mistake, and what I am very critical of scientists for, is when they step outside the field of science and claim ground, which is our ground, the ground of the theists, the ground of the philosophers, the grounds of the intellectuals, the thinkers, those who are involved themselves with logic and reason. And where they do that is when they try to answer questions that are too big for them. And so when they try to answer the question of the creation, that is a question which is too big for them. They have no business there, because what is science supposed to be? Science is supposed to be some formula, some method that someone has an idea, he proposes a hypothesis. Oh, that if I apply electricity to water, I can separate out hydrogen and oxygen. Okay? So he tries it, and he shows by experimentation, every time this is done, that the same result occurs. The hydrogen and the oxygen become separated. They can be captured as two distinct gases, hydrogen and oxygen, and used for whatever purpose or whatever. And if they're combined again in a particular method, again they will produce water. Oh, very good. That's your theory. You've proven it. Then through peer review, it's acknowledged and accepted that many persons performing the same experiment get the same result. Not half the time, not 90% of the time, but 100% of the time, you get the same you do the same experiment in the same way, the same method, and you get the same result. And you call that science, and that's supposed to be objective science. And okay, fine, yeah, good. I have no quarrel with that. But when you want to go back in time and tell us what happened 1,000 years ago, 5,000 years ago, 1,000,000 years ago, 1,000,000,000 years ago, and further like that, which they purport to do, but never take the responsibility for doing it, meaning they can't prove it, right? So what am I talking about? Well, we'll take one example, creation. And, the theories change from decade to decade, more or less, certainly century to century. And so at one time, science was in line with theist. And there was a creator, and he said, let there be light, and there was light, and et cetera, like that. And science, the scientist of the day, more or less agreed with that, went along with it. Then as they refined their instruments, then they began to see things differently. And for instance, the theory, and many ages past, was that the Earth was flat. And they, through refining their instruments and through investigation, discovered, no, the Earth is round. Okay. They, through astronomy, they developed telescopes, and through their telescopes they could see further and further objects, or objects at a distance more clearly, and so therefore they could make calculations, and they could also predict, and through visual reference through the telescope say certain things about the moon or something like that, some object which is distant from us. And that's okay also to a point, but that also has its problems, but I'll come back to that maybe later. So, but as this developed and they gathered what they called evidence about how the development of the Earth and so many things, they drill into the Earth and they find that there are different layers and the geological history and so many things like this, then they are saying that therefore they know what occurred 100 years ago, 500, a million, a billion, etc., like that, and they want us to think and believe what they believe, that all of their calculations are accurate and correct. So, and they have different ways of proving it, like through isotopes, through what are they called, like nuclear isotopes. They can say with apparent accuracy how old something is by the the half-life of a certain isotope that's found in something. They say, oh, it's lost this much of its life, so that's, we can predict how old it was. Things like this. So they apply these methods, and they take these methods to their limit, but they really take them beyond their limit. So the limit is before time. That's the limit. The limit is before time began. Right? So they may be able to tell us something with accuracy or not, because it cannot be verified either way. Cannot be verified. How do we go back a billion years, a million years, 500 million years? 500,000 years. How do we know what happened then? Well, in the case of the Vedic civilization, I have heard this sort of thing. What we talk about, the pastimes that we read about in the Bhagavatam and so forth, the pastimes of Lord Ramachandra, the pastimes of Lord Nrisimhadev, things like this, that occurred long, long, long time ago. They say no, because then there were only dinosaurs and other, prehistoric creatures. There was no developed a humanoid, no human being that was living at the same time as the dinosaur. Now, suddenly, recently, before I came here, I heard, sorry, it looks like probably humans were living at the same time as the dinosaur. Oops, sorry. We missed it again, and all the faith that you had put in us, and so on and so forth, depending on our theories and explanations. Well, just adjust it a little bit, and just keep doing this, because this is what they do over and over and over throughout history. They keep adjusting these theories to suit the new evidence. They're always collecting evidence, good, but that means that they find things that, surprisingly, they weren't expecting. Why weren't they expecting it? I expect it. Probably most of you expect it. But they are thinking, no, what we know today is absolute. It's for certain, and it will always be certain and cannot be changed. Mostly. Not every, you know, some things they haven't agreed upon fully yet, but many things like this, they're saying with great confidence, you know, some years ago, 50 years ago, 25 years ago, 100 years ago, man as we know him today could not have lived at the same time as the dinosaurs. Why? No evidence. But you cannot prove a negative, right? So this is because there's no evidence. Actually, Sagan said something like this: lack of evidence is not lack of proof. I believe that's what it was. Lack of evidence is not lack of proof. It only means that the evidence, the proof may come when you get the evidence, right? So to know for certain, for a fact, objectively, as they portray themselves to be, that there was no human being living at the time of the dinosaurs, then they would have to examine the entire earth under the ocean, the earth underneath the ocean, the earth at the top of Mount Everest, and I don't know how deep, but to get some certainty, they'd have to do what they do. You see them sifting, you know, they're looking for fossils or something, and they scrape some earth and they put it in a sieve, a big screen, and they're sifting. So until they've done that, with every inch of this globe, then can they say for certain? How? How can they say? But they do. later. They think so. They think they know. So the creation, they say they've had different theories. The Big Bang theory, then that meant that at some point something exploded, and there was a giant, tremendous mass, and it shot out throughout the universe that we know, and all it was gas, and the gas cooled and formed planets, suns, stars, all the things that we know of in the universe. Then as I remember it, and I'm no scientist, and I, you know, don't take everything I'm saying as you can investigate, fact check yourselves, but as I remember it, another theory came along, and that was the I forget the term for it, but it's the expanding and contracting universe. We started with the expanding universe, then we had the expanding and the contracting universe. And I liked that theory. I thought, wow, this is exactly what the Bhagavatam says. The Bhagavatam says the universes are coming out of the pores of Lord Vishnu, and they're expanding. And then when they dissolve, then they're contracting again. Everything is unwound, dissolved, coming, congealing, so to speak, and being drawn again back within the pores of Lord Vishnu. Another explanation is when he exhales, all the universes are created. When he inhales, they're all destroyed, like that. So expanding and contracting, I think that sounds like the right one. I like that one. And now the latest thing is that everything started from a singularity, and which is means all the matter in the entire universe was in something was contained in an immeasurably tiny mass. So like the dot, you know, smaller than that, smaller than the dot on a piece of paper, like the dot over an I when you're reading something. Smaller than that, all matter was contained in something that tiny. And for some reason, which they don't know, suddenly something happened which caused it to leave that state and expand so rapidly that it went from that to something gigantic. I don't know how very gigantic, in like a nanosecond, like just extremely fast, unbelievably fast, because there was so much energy contained there, like bound up. The explanation is like all the energy, all the mass in the universe was all bound up in this tiny little thing. And with the conclusion you would draw is waiting to do what it did, explode, right? Just needs like a little hair trigger, something happens, and boom, like that. So that's their theory. And it's okay that they have their theories. What's not okay is that they want to exclude all other theories. And they do. They want to, what is our theory? I just explained it. Mahavishnu, this and that. That's our theory, right? It's not our theory, it's our belief. And what they are saying is their belief. Not proven, cannot be proved. And yet they talk with, you know, so many formulas and big numbers and equations and so many things that they expect that we will believe what they have to say, and most people do actually, as a matter of fact. So the other thing is a lesser problem than that. To explain the creation, that's a big difficulty. We can explain it. Why can we explain it? Because we have information from the Creator. Okay, who created it? He's telling, this is how he did it. Right, okay, here's Lord Brahma, here's Lord Vishnu, Mahavishnu, Garbhadakshay Vishnu, here's Lord Brahma, his meditation, etc., etc. Okay, there it is. Fine. It's laid out for us. And where does it come from? Is it something that mysteriously happens with oxygen, helium, hydrogen, et cetera, et cetera? No, it didn't mysteriously happen with material elements that have no thinking ability, no information generating or retention ability, right? None of those, matter doesn't have those things, but consciousness does, and God has it to an unlimited degree. So which is more reasonable? Non-thinking, non-information generating or anything material, suddenly in an explosion creates everything that we know and don't know. And there's a very funny thing that I heard many years ago on it, something called this tape that was made by some friends of mine, Rishabhadev, and maybe some of you knew. And it's called Radio Ram, and they did this thing where it was a skit, and in the background were explosions. And the idea was, oh, what are you, like a radio or television interviewer is asking, what are you doing there? Oh, we're blowing up this house or something. Oh, why are you doing that? Oh, we want to see how many times we have to blow it up before it falls into place and creates a house exactly like it again. Well, how's that going? Well, not too good, you know. We've been done it thousands and thousands of times, but still, as many times as we blow it up, we don't get a house. all the elements are there, you know, brick, steel, concrete, you know, but we keep blowing it up and no house, we don't know why. We know that's how the universe was created. So it's a joke, but that's what they're telling us. This is how the universe was created. This is how everything we know, conscious and unconscious, was created. Just boom, 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 little pieces of matter, hydrogen, helium, things bouncing, hitting each other, and somehow miraculously, then consciousness comes out of that. An organized system. Planets, you know, with suns in the center that revolve around each other and they don't crash into each other and all of these things, you know, and then life develops on at least one that they know of, et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, the tides come in and they go down and all, you know, there's air, there's oxygen, there's carbon dioxide, you know, and all of these things all, you know, how by just basically things crashing into each other and just, you know, from disorder, order has miraculously occurred. Well, show me how do you do that? How does randomness become order? How do random events suddenly take an orderly appearance? Show me. But they can argue their side. They will argue with me, no doubt. They will try to give some explanation, but nothing remotely satisfactory that I've ever heard. So, then they take that further to what we're just touching on here. From non-consciousness, consciousness erupts, develops. And one of the ideas with Darwin's theory that I used to argue with so much was this idea of natural selection. Now, I think I didn't understand it properly, and I may understand it a little better today, but what I understood it to mean was what the phrase describes, natural selection. Somehow things are selecting what they will be. So a salamander needs legs to live outside of the water, right? Something like this. So somehow some creature, some fish type creature, the fins develop into legs, and with the legs he can crawl on land, and then, but that's not good enough. He wants to hang out in the trees also, so the legs have to develop into hands and arms and so forth, so he can climb up the trees. And then for some reason that's not good enough for him. He needs to fly also, so something happens, and then you get some creature, these reptiles, you know, that can also, the arms develop into like wings, and then they can fly, and they're very, it's like good science fiction story. But what I was always puzzled by is that they never answer the question why. And the puzzlement is, well, like you'll hear so many things ascribed to survival of the species. For the necessity of the species to survive, then these things had to develop or something like that. And what's the next question? What would be our question then? Huh? Close, yeah. A little more? What's the purpose of what? Yes, right, exactly. Who cares? Who if there's no life, no intelligence, no anything, some chemicals? Where does this question come from about survival? What's surviving? Is the stone worried about its survival? The sand, the beaches, the ocean? Is it struggling in the hard struggle for existence? Is it trying to make new oceans, new beaches, new rock, new mountains, new any of these seemingly inanimate things? Are they trying to preserve themselves somehow or other? No. But these things are. Why? Why? For what? What is it? Where does that idea come from? It's completely illogical. And I always tell, when I'm having this sort of class, I always tell the example of my father, which is very funny. And I was having he is a scientist, you could say. He's a chemical engineer. And so I often discuss, I try to run my ideas past him, you know, if he can counter my arguments, you know, and see how we're doing. So actually he never could. He admitted that I always defeat him. And he said, but he never would not, he was still unshaken in his belief. So in one of these discussions where he admitted defeat, acknowledged defeat. And at the end of the conversation, we were talking on the phone, so he says, I'll talk to you another time, you know, or something. Okay. And my father says, I love you. I said, what are you talking about? You can't say that. That's not science. That's not a scientific statement. We're just talking about something here that you profess to believe in, etc. What is that about? What do you mean? Explain that. I can't explain it, but anyway, I do. That's their position. That's their position. It's all chemicals. The consciousness is nothing. It just happens by chance, like computer thrown together that remanufactures itself, duplicates itself, and makes better computers endlessly until the finest computer in the world emerges, you know, something like that, and is able to calculate how the whole universe was created. That's, you know, the gist of their argument. And do the computers love, do they have to love each other? Does that happen? Not happen. Doesn't seem to be happening. So, Mr. Scientist, you have a mother and a father. Do you love them? Why? Why? Propagation of the species is necessary. We maintain each other, you know. Why do you want to propagate? Who cares? What, you tell us that the body is value and chemical content is about 98 cents. You know what? I'd pay a dollar to get rid of you. Make it $2, you know. It's fine with, I'll cover that, you know. Will you accept the deal? I'll give it to your family, you know, so they'll miss you, you know. No. They always have some reason why. That's crazy. Crazy talk. No, that's what you're telling us. That's your talk. Chemicals. It's all just chemicals. So 98 cents, some hydrogen, some oxygen, some water, you know, whatever, you know. Nutrients. The body goes in the ground, nutrients for some other things. Oh, let's put your money where your mouth is. What is the value? 98 cents, 88 cents, you know, maybe inflation, deflation goes up and down, but, you know, we're in the ballpark. What all of this trouble is about? Oh, you're working so hard to maintain your family. You go to school, you know, so you can get a good job. And you want to take care of your children and their children and so many things. Why? Why are you doing it? If it's just chemicals, why? If you accept a random theory that there was an explosion and everything was produced from the explosion, then what's all the fuss about? What's it about? Anyone can answer? How about any of our young people that have been in school recently? Yes? Huh? A little louder? What? Can't hear you.
He's saying that he's been in school recently.
Oh, all right, good for you. Well, be careful, because they may try to brainwash you and turn your head around. But what is all the fuss about? I don't get it, really. I do not get it. Hard struggle for existence. Why? What does it matter? So what does this lead to? Obviously, they don't believe it either. They do not buy their own nonsense. They're not buying into it. They're telling others this. We're supposed to accept them as, you know, next thing to God and so on and so forth. And do you believe what you say? No, really, you know, they really don't. Because if they did, then nothing would matter. Matter wouldn't matter. Why does it matter? It should not. So, they're very good at this middle point. They can show how to make water from hydrogen and oxygen. They can show how to separate hydrogen and oxygen from water. They can make many chemicals work to do things that they manipulate them to do. But they cannot make the chemical. Not the original thing. They can combine things that are already here. And they cannot do anything but discover more and more about what is here. What's in front of your eyes? Oh, well, I discovered that actually the marble is made of, you know, this and this and this. Okay, and does it make the, you know, what is that done for us? Recently, some scientists are talking about in the United States. They're very upset that the shuttle. They have these space shuttles that go into, you know, near Earth orbit, you know, to supply satellites and to supply the space station that's there and so forth. And they're thinking that it's had like 25, 30 years now using these same machines, and they're getting old. And we have this Earth orbiting space station, but we need to go out to Mars. And we've been to the moon. We need to go to Mars. And, you know, Prabhupada said everything that you need to know about going to the moon. Oh, they went there and they brought back some rocks. How? Wow, all right. This is billions of dollars. That's where our money's going. We have rocks here. Now we have them from the moon.
Prabhupada said, that's not our moon. That's what he said. I heard that. That's not our moon.
So, if they go to Mars, you know, what are they going to do there?
Red rocks.
Anything different? You can go to Oklahoma and get that.
Bring back some wind.
Huh?
Bring back some wind. Cause Mars,
some wind?
Like 6,000 watts or something.
I think they're in the wind now. Anyway, what time is it? What time is it? Okay, we still have a few minutes. So, we've had a lot of fun. I haven't explained everything so clearly that I wanted to explain. What I wanted to get at is that they can explain, really, they have some idea what to do with everything that happened after the creation. After the, right now, and, you know, 100 years ago, and, you know, in a small time frame, they can do something. They can say something about where we are now. They have knowledge of that. But that's long after the important part. The important part is what happened before. And that part they can't go to. They can only speculate about it. And they can collect what they think is evidence, which will describe the event and so forth. But they cannot actually do, they cannot prove anything that they will want to say about it. Because it's outside the scientific method. Hypothesis, experiment, proof, you know, peer review, etc. They can't do that. And the same thing with the origin of life, which is something they also think that they know about. They talk as if they know about it. In the schools in the United States, they won't allow any discussion like the one we're having today in a science class or a biology class or something. It's actually forbidden by law. More or less, I don't know exactly, but more or less, it's forbidden. Because they've decided the Darwinian idea is the only one that is valid. And that the evolution of species. And Srila Sridharmar, when I began by saying that what Srila Sridharmar said to Swarup Damodar, you build erect a tombstone over the grave of Darwin. Destroy that idea. Bury it. That's your job, Swarup Damodar Maharaj. So we all, I think, are charged with that to some degree. At least make sure that we have some idea which is in the proper line. That from consciousness, everything proceeds. I was talking with Vera Chandrapu the other day. Everything proceeds from the very most subtle to the most gross. And it can never go the other way. What is gross cannot produce subtle, cannot produce a fine thing. Only the finest thing, consciousness, intelligence, mind, etc. Those things can produce gross things. But the grossest thing, the earth, the water, these things, they cannot produce mind. They cannot produce intelligence. They cannot produce the soul or anything of a fine nature. So why we are to challenge these ideas, these scientific ideas, is not because we dislike science, but they are trying to come into our territory. What they are doing is in the realm of philosophy. It's in the realm of a belief system. We're supposed to believe in them, what they say. And the finest, the most difficult questions of science, they will never be solved by mathematics, by physics, by geometry, any of these, chemistry, biology. They cannot be solved that way, because they're beyond that. They transcend those methods, and they can only be solved through logic, reason, through philosophy, through a finer, and ultimately through a finer theistic conception, because that's where it's all coming from, and it can't come in any other way. So our argument is that you are trying to say something which is out of your field. If you say that evolution must have occurred, and they will admit they don't agree on how. They only agree that it did. Well, that also tells you something, right? They will disagree on how it occurred, but they all agree that it did occur. So that means not only they can't prove it, but those who are trying to establish a particular position, they are being confronted by others trying to establish a different position. So that's not, you know, in no way settled, that matter, even amongst them. And where was I going with that? It cannot be within their realm of knowledge, because no amount. First of all, we know we have imperfect senses. We have the tendency to cheat, right? Exploit others. What are the others? Huh? Yeah, I said imperfect senses, tendency to cheat, subject to illusion, covered by illusion, subject to illusion. Yeah, I said that, yeah. Huh? Anyone know? Okay. Anyway, I can think about it, but we don't have time. They're defective. Huh? Yeah, I said that, right. Yeah, imperfect senses. But worse than imperfect, we have a tendency to cheat others. Or you combine those two things and you've got, a lot of problems can occur. So when I began this and told you about this idea that the scientists say, oh, they love their families, they love this one and that one, they have affection, all of these things, not scientific, not matter-oriented, right? In no way matter chemically oriented. But when they say that, then that means they are cheating. They are cheaters. If they want to protect anyone, then they are a cheater. Because according to them, the height of intellect has been derived how? How have we come to the height of intellect? Huh? No. Huh? No. Through random events. Natural selection. So we don't need anyone. We don't need you. Because your greatest intellect, as you describe it, has come about by random order of events. So that means chance and random events are superior to anything that you can say, you do, or think. Isn't that the logical conclusion? Nothing you can say, do, think will mean anything in the future, because a random series of events will surpass you. Isn't it? So do you admit that, Mr. Scientist? You are last year's model. We don't need you anymore, because a number of random events will produce a better model than we have now. But who's talking about that? I've heard so many discussions, scientists and theists, and science. Have I never heard this question? Why this question is not there? If I believe what you say, Mr. Scientist, That all things that we know in this universe have come about through random happenings, collisions of matter, then probably already there's someone much more intelligent than you that has been produced by such a random event. Now, why do we need to listen to you? Where is that person? And then why listen to him? Because another one will be coming around the corner. So, I, in my, you know, we'll see what the guy Shulagurmai. We'll see what the counter argument is to what I'm saying, but from all that I can think so far, that they are committing suicide with these statements. They are defeating themselves with their ideas. But for some reason, hardly anyone is challenging them on this point. I don't know why. It seems so obvious intellectually, reasonable what I'm saying. So we'll see what the future brings. But
I was a Bible student for many years.
Huh?
And I was a Bible student for many years.
Bible.
And I was aware in listening to your talk. The very first sentence in the Bible is, "In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth." What I want to know is, what was before the "in," or what is the "in" the beginning? And if scientists could just get, or religionists or whoever can get to the core of that "in," it might be a minuscule thing, but that might be it.
In as in the beginning, that "in"?
Yeah. Uh-huh. Well, what's before the "in"?
Speculation. From their side, from the side of the scientists, pure speculation. But from our side, it's a long topic, but in brief, you already know it as a Christian, from your Christian background, God. Before in the beginning, there was God. He was existing eternally, always, right?
Yeah.
So. He is beginning less, no beginning for him.
Oh, okay.
Right? So.
Where were you when I needed you?
Huh?
Where were you when I needed you?
Hare Krishna. All right. Does anyone have any question? Or I welcome anyone that will want to challenge anything that I have to say. Because that's the way we grow, and these ideas, it has to be thesis, antithesis, synthesis. It has to be some challenge, and then something grows out of that better than the other thing. But it's not random. You have a question or a challenge? Okay.
You shouldn't listen to one person, like the scientist who is saying that, because the smart person would be made, but then you shouldn't listen to that person because even the smart person would be made. If you just follow that forever, wouldn't you just not listen to anyone?
That's my hope. Not listen to anyone in that line of reasoning. I'm sure you couldn't all hear his question. His question was, following the scientific idea that we shouldn't listen to you because by random events, someone better than you, a better thinker, has already been created. And he said, well, then that person would be replaced also by a better one. And he said, so doesn't that lead to not listening to anyone? And of course, yeah, good. I buy that, yes, I agree. Don't listen to anyone with those ideas. You find someone who is who really is an authority on these things. And how is it possible that one can be an authority? That's also a severe question which we have to confront and answer. And that answer is very easy. That which is within All that has been formed and created within our knowledge has to have been done by something beyond our knowledge. This creation, what we know about, what is the limit? We have a limit of knowledge. Knowledge is not endless in this world. It's limited. We have a limited, and I described one of those limits before time, right? We can speculate and guess and estimate and calculate to some extent what happened within a time frame that we know. Whether you say that's from the singularity that expanded so rapidly, or the Big Bang universe, or the expanding and contracting, whatever. So, and his question, but what about before that? So, before that means transcendent. Before that means, before time means transcendent to time. Before the creation, what was existing before the creation? Krishna answers that in, I think that in the Bhagavatam, I forget it now. Then he's, forget the Sanskrit, but he's telling Lord Brahma, that which was existing before the creation, that which you see existing now, and everything that will be existing in the future, know that to be me. That is Bhagavan. That's the only thing it can be. Can't be anything else. The information necessary to create this a system like we know of within our material experience, what created that has to be something with vastly more information. You can't get, you know, gazillion pieces of information where there was no information. It has to come from greater information. And this is a part of that greater information. Om Purnam Adha Purnam Idam. Purnam Purnat. Om Purnam Adha Purnam Idam. Purnam Purnat Udachate. Purnasya Purnam Adayam. Purnam Evaiva Shishate. Everything is perfect. Everything is complete. But we can't see that everything is perfect and everything is complete. That means we have a defect. We have a defect. But the seers, the knowers, they can see it. They know it. Shukadev, the greatest scientist. Vyasadev, the greatest scientist. Philosophers, etc. They are telling us these things. Why don't we listen? They know. But the material scientists that say, oh, we're open to everything. We want to investigate every realm, every possibility, every facet. Okay? Here's the Vedanta. Here's the Vedas. Here's what we say. We read it. Oh, we don't have time for that. I know how the universe was created. Would you like to know how? You know, God. Whoa! Hey, no. No, please. No time. That's foolishness. Cannot tell us anything. No. We don't want to hear that. Well, why? I thought you were a scientist. Aren't you open to So their method, Bhaktivinoda Thakur described it very nicely. I don't remember exactly, but their method is such that the deeper their exploration by their method, the further they go, the more progress they make by their method, takes them further and further and further away from the truth. And so we need an intervention. I don't know if that means anything to you. In the United States, there's like this idea, like if someone is using, your friend is using drugs, and the whole family like has to do an intervention. Help this man get away from his drug problem, you know, or something like that. The scientists, you know, we need to do an intervention with the scientist. Hey, grab them by the throat, grab them by the collar. Hey, listen, take a minute. What we've got to say is not unreasonable. You men of reason or not? Yes, yes. Oh, what we have to say is not unreasonable. Take a minute. Check it out. Like many of the people I'm interviewing, they're asking the people watching, check it out. Check us out. See what we've got to say. Give us a listen. If you don't like it, okay. If it doesn't make sense to you, okay. But Govinda Maharaj said about Srila Sridhar Maharaj that anyone in front of him for 10 minutes, he could convince. That's our job, to become like that. Now, if we can get someone for a few minutes and with an open ear, not protesting, but with an open ear, then we should be able to give them some reason why our philosophy makes sense, is valuable, and should be given some attention. That's our job as disciples, to do that. So anyway, I got a little far afield once again. I'm with you. Don't listen to those people. Listen to our gurus, our sadhus, our scriptures. That's all you need to know. You'll know more than anyone else can ever possibly tell you.
I'd like to put out one more thing, if I may. I'm new to this.
Yes.
I was a pianist for many years, and I became aware of Bach and Mozart and Beethoven. The perfection, where does that perfection, mathematical perfection, come to a great art?
Practice.
More than practice. Well, that's practice once it's on paper, but
no.
Once it's on paper, where does that come from, that inspiration?
Comes from the intellect.
What?
From the intellect.
It's hard to
comprehend. And usually it comes through many births with that interest. So Mozart was a very young, a very young age. He was
3 years old. 3 years old,
yeah. So you tell me, how is that possible? How did that happen?
I don't have a clue.
Oh, we do.
Tell me.
Yeah, it happened because in his previous life, he was a great pianist. He was a great musician, a great composer. Yeah. Yeah, so in his previous life, this was his focus. This was his intense study, was on in that field. And in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, wherever your mind is fixed at the time of death, at that state you will attain, certainly. So at the time of death, certainly, he was, you know, thinking in this musical way, this musical interest, but not perfected in that previous life. And another life, again, taking up that pursuit where it left off previously.
Thank you. That helps me a lot.
Because it's this, the soul is eternal. But our body, we change bodies, right? Now here are some young men here. They have, if you see him 20, 40, 60 years from now, he'll look very different, right? But if you talk to him, you will know this is the same boy that was sitting here in this class 20, 40, 60 years before.
Will you?
Yes.
Will you?
Yes. Of course, I won't be here, but maybe you will. Sure, why not?
I don't know. Changes throughout the life to change a person completely?
No. No, it does not. No. Ask any temple president. They are always thinking, oh, here's this new man. He has some rough edges, but soon he'll be a perfect Vaishnava. And It's like the joke about the woman who thinks she's going to change the man she's marrying and make him a good man, you know, like a perfect husband. You know, sorry ladies, it doesn't usually work that way. No, but you will recognize. First of all, he'll have memory of this. How many others will have that memory, right? So why is that? So many things. But if you say we may not recognize, but he will know. Why does he know? Why is that memory with us? You know your. How old are you, if you don't mind me asking?
I'm old enough to know better. But
okay.
I'll give you a number.
All right.
I'm how old am I?
70. 70. Okay.
Yes.
And you were 6, 7, 10, 12, 20, 30, 40, 50, right?
Yes.
And are you still the same person?
No.
No? Where'd that person go? There was. Do you remember a ten? You remember having a 10-year-old body?
Photographs.
A 20? How far back do you remember?
I guess I can go back to maybe 10.
Okay, right. So you can remember having a 10-year-old body, 15, 16, 17, 20, 30, right?
Yeah.
Right. You and think about what I'm saying. You remember when you had that body, right? You are the same. Body is changing. Your thinking is changing. I don't mean your thinking is the same. Thinking is also changing. But you who had that body at 10 years old, now the body is 70 years old, very different body. But the witness to those changes is you. The witness is still there with us, right? I was 10, I was 15, I was 17, 30, 40. Now I'm 70. I witnessed all of these changes of bodies. At the time of death, it's just like changing a suit of clothes. Same thing. That memory, that consciousness remains the same. But it goes into another body, just like the 10-year-old, when it body left, gone, that change, out the window, 15-year-old body, 20-year-old, 30-year-old. So many different bodies, like changing, we've already thrown off so many suits of clothes, right? But the wearer of the clothes is still there, right?
Okay.
Who's being suited and booted, he's still existing. Just putting on different suit, different boots, different hat, right?
Yeah.
Different clothes. That's what, at the time of death, same thing. Oh, I leave this whole suit, my wardrobe now, throw it out,
yep.
Get a whole new wardrobe and start again. So wherever one's mind is fixed at the time of death, then that mental system will go with you to your next body and start again at that place where you left off. Very natural, just like I didn't start at 20 years old, it wasn't a whole different thing. I was just continuing from 10, 11, 12, 13, 15, 17, just a continuum, right? At the time of death, same thing, just continuing. Our idea is stop it. Become, if we can understand this conception perfectly of our guru, that we are the servant of guru and God, right? If we can understand that perfectly, then at the time of death, we will live with them in a spiritual form and never again have any of this material body, clothing, etc. That's our hope. That's our goal.
So, what doesn't die, or what was never born, can we say is consciousness?
What?
Is consciousness.
What is?
What
never dies, never born.
What
soul.
Never born or never dies, can we say consciousness?
Yeah. And, yes.
Always here.
Yeah, and
eternity,
yes, sure.
Okay.
And
this is very simplistic, but it's important.
It's not simplistic.
Well,
no, it's simple. It's not simplistic.
Okay.
It's simple, and it's true.
Yeah. Okay.
And something that's very nice is that the best things are simple and true. The best things are simple and true. So the only thing I want to add to that, to clarify that what you asked about consciousness, that which exists eternally, that we are that, and it is an individual unit of consciousness. An individual unit, a particular individual with your own likes, dislikes, aspirations, etc. All of the things connected with sentience, with a sentient being wanting to see, hear, touch, taste, but in a purely spiritual form, purely spiritual fashion, not with any interest in the material world. When you realize that, then you will have all of the same, you will have sensual experience in your own unique individual way, but with all the devotees of the Lord and with the Lord Himself in the spiritual world.
That's very comforting.
I'm glad to hear that. Good, I think so. Jai Om Vishnu Pad Paramahansa Srila Bhakti Rakat Shira Dev Goswami Maharaj Ki Jai Nittai Gaur Premanande Hare Krishna. All right, we're very late. If anyone needs to go, don't feel you have to stay. You can scatter to the wind, do your seva as you need. I will not be offended or anything.
Jai Shri Padgiri Maharaj Ki Jai.
We will chant Hari Haraya Nama Krishna, those remaining. Right here. The camera. Anyone have reading glasses that they don't need at the moment?